This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Happy Friday, everyone. Care for some news?
A mass shooting has sent at least 10 people to the hospital.
Illinois is one of the few states that provides health care benefits to undocumented immigrants. But the state is beginning to scale back that coverage, and it's causing a political rift.
Crews are racing against time to prepare the NASCAR Chicago Street Race course. It's a 2.2-mile course that winds through downtown on Michigan Avenue and on DeSable Lakeshore Drive for the first time ever.
Today is the summer solstice in the Northern Hemisphere, making it the longest day of the year. After today, the days begin getting shorter.
And I can't break down these stories alone, so I've invited some newsy friends along to help. Our panel today is WTTW host and correspondent Paris Schatz, WTTW political correspondent Amanda Vinicky, and rounding out our group is WBEZ city politics reporter Mariah Wolfel. All right, folks, lots of news, but I want to start on the lighter side today, if we can. Summertime Shy is official.
Woo-hoo!
Amazing.
Yay!
This week we welcome the summer solstice, which officially kicks off the season, as we know. I mean, are you in the summertime spirit? I know you are, Amanda.
Better believe it, I am.
Oh, it's been summertime for a while.
No,
I don't
it hasn't.
Wait for the solstice.
No, it hasn't.
Yeah, we don't have to.
It's been up and down for me.
Yeah, that's true. But still, once you get a little bit of glimpse of sun and warmth,
everything is
a reset.
I like it when I'm mad by walking outside because of how hot I am and how much I'm sweating. Like, that's when I know it's summer, and that was for me, like, this past week.
I get anxious about being inside. Like, every moment that I'm indoors, I feel like is a moment missed enjoying this brief bit of respite that we get.
But at least it's still late when we get out of work.
Yes.
That is true.
High five, Paris.
High five
I can't reach you, but air five.
That is so true. Yeah, I mean, we're going to get to some of your summer recommendations later this hour, so I want you to get those ready in the meantime. But Wednesday's summer solstice was the longest day of the year, with more than 15 hours and 13 minutes of sunlight. I mean, did you make the most of that extra time? Paris doesn't
even
remember.
I don't even remember what I did.
What we did on Wednesday.
That was like 3 weeks ago in my mind.
I think I just worked.
I'm just talking about Wednesday.
Wednesday.
2 days ago.
Oh,
wow.
My gosh.
You know, I did.
Literally, I don't know.
I
what
usually
I did.
Do a like a whole yoga routine situation. And this year, I did not do that. I'm not particularly. Yeah. So
okay.
But that's normally what I do. I thought about it.
Yeah. You know what I did that I can't believe I forgot. I took my niece to the Fall Out Boy concert at Wrigley Field.
Nice.
And that was very fun and nostalgic.
And the rest of us that live on the North Side heard that concert.
Fireworks.
All right.
Oh my gosh.
It was just
booming teenage angst.
It didn't matter. Like if you're on Western and Montrose, I think you heard the entire
concert.
I thought
it was people down the street.
Right.
All right, so another story we're gearing up for this summer, NASCAR. You can already see the concrete barriers and bleachers up near Buckingham Fountain. Yesterday, I was driving around the area, and at every right turn I tried to make off Lakeshore, it was like, oh, nope, blocked. Nope, can't go there. Are you looking forward to the big event or apprehensive, folks?
I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to be paying to go. I think it's great for people who want to. And I do think that there's sort of been this stigma against NASCAR that I'm not sure there would be if it was another sport. That said, it's far more disruptive than any other sport. So you can't also make that comparison fairly. It is a pain in the arse to get around at a time when traffic is already absolutely terrible. So throwing any sort of additional wrench in there
is
not particularly helpful.
This is the first time that NASCAR racers have done a city street course like this. I mean, you mentioned if we're another racing circuit like Formula One, this is what they do. So mm-hmm. they know how to do this. So I think there's apprehension within NASCAR, too. I remember Dale Earnhardt Jr. telling me he thinks that half the drivers are going to be kind of dreading this. And they're not going to get
slow times.
They're only practicing on a simulator. They're going to get like an hour on the course before they actually have to do the race. So they're used to going around in an oval, not doing sharp right turns and left turns.
Okay, this freaks
me out.
So
there are legit safety concerns for the drivers.
Well, I think NASCAR says
and
they
crowds.
Have it all figured out. But according to what Earnhardt said, some of the drivers are nervous because they haven't done this. And we've all driven along that course at some point or another. These are sharp turns and narrow streets and lots of cars. And, you know, yes, there's a fear of like a car just flipping and winding up in the Art Institute or something like
that.
It does seem like a video game almost when you imagine how it could play out.
And I think that the cars are going to go slow because of that. They're not going to go full throttle. They can go 150 along some of those straightaways. But I think you have apprehensive drivers. So if it all goes out without a hitch, Mayor Johnson has to did it bring tourism? Did it bring revenue? Was it minimal disruption? Then maybe it's worth doing again or not. It's totally up in the air.
My goodness. I mean, as we've talked about, the grandstands, they've mostly been built so far. There are still pedestrian bridges that need to go up. Overall, NASCAR says that they've never built anything this large this fast.
Everybody's flying blind here. This is brand new
so
for
fast,
everybody.
Which is never good. Chicago 675 on YouTube says NASCAR is going to be a challenge from a public safety perspective. Mm-hmm. But we do know there are folks super excited about this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
This is incredible. And it's a classic.
Course if you like NASCAR.
Yeah.
Beautiful skyline, beautiful
so
views.
Pretty.
I mean, just looking at the bleachers when you're downtown, you're like, oh, that looks so cool.
Right.
If you like that sort of stuff.
All right. So
if you're into that sort of thing.
They did this PR thing where they took reporters around the course. Dale Jarrett, one of the famous old drivers, he was in the car with me, and he said his concern is that drivers are going to be distracted by the beauty of the skies. Now, look at this architecture. They're not used to seeing this. This is going to be something to get used to in the first couple laps. Like,
Chicago's too pretty for NASCAR.
I'm afraid they might get distracted. That was, like, legit one of his top concerns.
Yeah, so speaking of top concerns, Amanda brought it up earlier, those prices. Tickets start at $269 for general admission, $353 for enhanced general admission, $465 for premium seats. So even with the construction and these premium prices, there still seems to be this excitement. Let's listen to Julie Giese, who's the president of NASCAR Chicago Street Race.
We have ticket sales from all 50 states as well as 14 different countries. That was one thing that we committed to the city early on, was to drive tourism and give this city a boost from a tourism perspective. And we're seeing that when you look at ticket sales.
Do you think she's right, Mariah? Could this event deliver on that big tourism boost for Chicago?
Well, I think that, as Paris said, it's uncharted. I think that's going to be part of the evaluation afterwards. Mayor Brandon Johnson did not decide to bring this event to the city of Chicago. He hasn't been, you know, outright opposed to it or critical of it, but I think he is going to have to make some evaluations after to see if this is going to be worth bringing back.
Yeah.
It was easier to bring in Taylor Swift to bump up those numbers.
Here's another question from YouTube. Does anyone actually know the incremental revenue this event is bringing to the city when you factor in we're normally busy that weekend and you factor in the costs like police overtime?
Boy, that's an unknown. I don't know whether they have a projection on that or not, and what the hotel. I mean, Taylor Swift sold out the hotels. There was a convention weekend too. Are the hotels going to be nearly sold out this weekend? But are they normally anyway? It's July 4th weekend. There's a lot going on. So,
and I think some of it is incalculable as well in terms of if you have a different audience. If this goes well, you have the beautiful Chicago skyline. Chicago is
nationally
dealing
televised.
With exactly. Is Chicago has some reputational issues. If you see and it goes great and it's beautiful weather and you see the skyline and Buckingham Fountain and all that on a nationally televised program that a lot of people that wouldn't otherwise come to Chicago, how do you calculate that in? But I think that is a very fair point in terms of the cost and projections.
I'm sure somebody's thinking about it. All right, we're on the topic of summer, so I want to squeeze in another story that we've got our eye on, and that's the greater Chicago area is in the midst of this drought. right? Two suburbs, they've imposed water restrictions on residents. That's New Lenox and Mokena. Are you feeling the drought conditions?
Well, this is kind of historic. I mean, the last time there was anything quite like this was 2012, according to a meteorologist that we talked to. And it doesn't look like there's any let up anytime soon, although I think there's some rain in the forecast for Sunday. But, you know, people love the sun. It means that their games aren't going to get rained out. But there's an economic cost here. Crops are starting to feel the effects of the drought. And that could really cost Illinois farmers, which rely on their harvest. And so they're definitely, no doubt, praying for rain. I mean, there's the environmental impact. You know, rivers are much less. What's the word? They're much...
They're low.
Low.
They're shallow.
Yes, they're low. They're
shallower.
So people might enjoy the sun, but there's an economic and environmental cost. And I think forecasters are kind of uncertain whether we're going to get out of this anytime soon.
Are you missing those severe thunderstorms this summer, Amanda?
You know, I do love them when I'm sleeping. I like them when you can hear it and, you know, you're settling down to bed. And
you can get to
that
sleep
I like.
In the middle of severe thunderstorms?
I can fall asleep anywhere.
Oh, wow.
It is one of my skills. Yeah, way to go me. I don't have many, but that one I got.
You're going to have to teach me that one.
Sure thing. I don't know. I think it's just get really, really tired.
Okay, sleep.
Yeah. But I don't miss them during the day. But
yeah.
It's to what Paris said. I mean, I recognize that much as I am delightful and like literally like skipping in the sunshine, that it is not great for.
Same. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But there are consequences, right? Anybody been paying attention to this? This is another summer story. Chicago Public Libraries, they're phasing out museum passes. So you know how you could usually stop at a library and get a few free tickets to the field or the shed for your family? Well, now that's actually being phased out and it's being replaced by this statewide program called Explore More Illinois. But not everyone is happy about this. I mean, why are parents pushing back?
I think there's concerns about the lack of advertising and just awareness around Explore More Illinois. Is that the program that they're replacing it with? But it does seem like a pretty similar situation where
it just
there
sounds
are,
like everything went digital.
Yeah.
To me.
So the museum passes that you can get from an aldermanic office or libraries, those are physical. You have to go. And
And
I think someone from a representative from from Chicago Public Libraries was telling Block Club that leads to like families driving around to different locations, because once you run out at a certain location, then there's no more passes for the day. So people driving around trying to find free passes, whereas this is kind of all digital. But yeah, concerns about, you know, whether families are aware of that right now, whether digital access is a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, I think a lot of museums in Chicago, too, just kind of scaled back from the free museum pass program anyways, because they kind of offer their own free museum days as part of a federal
program.
And
I'm hearing that the passes that you described that you could check out before in person, they would last for like a week, whereas these online, you have to just pick a specific date and you have to go on that day or, you know, or else kind of thing. Or maybe you'll have to just do it again.
So much coordination for
so
everything.
So much coordination.
I know.
All right, Amanda, on to Cook County. They're in the news, too. The Board of Commissioners announced yesterday that heading into 2024, they're estimating an $85.6 million deficit. But they're saying, don't worry. We're
don't
not raising
worry.
Taxes.
Don't fret it.
Don't
no, really.
Fret.
They're
so
saying
put this
that
in context.
They're saying that that's a relative drop in the bucket, a hole in the bucket, if you will.
Okay.
That it's really not that large of a deficit to make up through just regular measures. The county is contending with some additional pressures, particularly we've talked a lot, I know all of us, about the expenses of migrants and health care for them, and that is a cost that is borne a lot by the Cook County Health system. And so that is an issue. They're also contending with some pay raises that will be part of that. But Preckwinkle is saying, and by the way, also additional pension expenses, and that is through an agreement that the county had with state legislators as they're agreeing to take on some of these additional costs in hopes that it will ward off an emergency with the pension program in the future. But As long, I think, for the most part, the county government is one of those things that people are cool with as long as it wasn't, I don't know, like a soda tax or something that is really, really obvious.
Board President Preckwinkle, she says no new taxes are needed and she can close the gap with some, quote, tweaking, right? I mean, can $85 million just... Can we just find that in the couch cushions?
I mean, it's a seven-something billion-dollar budget. So I think it is she has a reputation, has built a reputation as being a solid fiscal steward. And it is the sort of thing where we don't know where the economy is going to go. And it's crazy to say that millions, a million dollars, let alone 85 of them, is not a lot of money, but relative to $7 billion.
But think about—oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and relative to the budget gaps that Chicago and Cook County saw during the at the height of the pandemic. In Cook County, I think it was more than $400 million. And so when you look at it, you know, how it's decreased over time, I mean, $85 million is what Mayor Lori Lightfoot had projected is going to be the budget deficit for next year. And she was like, this is my parting gift to,
that's Mayor Brandon Johnson. That's so true,
Well, think about this, though. They got a, somewhere around $1 billion in federal COVID relief money. They've only spent about a quarter to a third of that. So that's remarkable fiscal prudence on the part of the Cook County Board and President Preckwinkle. They have $700 million left to spread out over future years. And they could have said, like, oh, here's all this money. Let's go solve all our problems right now and spend it right now. And instead, they're taking the more prudent approach. And I will also say that the county public pension situation is relatively probably the best of all the local municipal governments. Now, that's not saying very much, but their funding is better than the city. It's better than a lot of the state funds. And it's amazing if we put this into context going back many, many, many years, Cook County government was always seen of as corrupt, a fiscal nightmare under former President Todd Stroger. And you have to say that whatever our faults are, this government has cleaned up its fiscal issues relative. I mean, nothing is great anywhere, but relative to other municipal governments around here.
Yeah. Stephen Ford on YouTube says, can the county government run a deficit like federal?
No, by statute, every government in Illinois has to balance its budget, and they can't declare bankruptcy, and they can't run a deficit. So they figure
They'll
out.
There are all sorts of ways. You show the bills over next year. There are ways to it, but it's not like the federal budget.
They have to balance the budget. Yes, they cannot carry a deficit.
Yeah. Let's head over to City Hall, Mariah. Of course, the city's still searching for its next police superintendent. But this week, we learned that 19 city council members in Chicago, they're backing a specific candidate. What's the story there? And tell us how Anthony Driver is feeling about this.
So this was some drama this week. You know, there is a new independent search process to determine who will lead the Chicago Police Department that is underway with the new Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability. And they conduct an independent nationwide search and then are responsible for sending three candidates to Mayor Brandon Johnson. The mayor has to choose from that list or send it back and say, give me three more. And that just continues to happen until we get a new police superintendent. You know, this was a major win for police reform advocates 2 years ago, creating this body because they really felt like, you know, community members should have the say in who leads the police department. So that search is underway. This week, 19 Chicago aldermen sent a letter to Anthony Driver, the head of the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability, saying, why didn't you interview this top-ranking CPD official? Why didn't you conduct a follow-up interview with Chief of Patrol Brian McDermott? You know, he's well-respected. We think he would be a great leader.
And he says, your letter is completely inappropriate.
Yeah, and Anthony Driver fires back and says, the fact that you think that you can use political sway And another complaint was that they sent this letter out to the media via a public relations firm before sending it to the commission. So really kind of like amplifying the idea that this is politicking in a place where the politics aren't supposed to be involved.
Yeah.
Anthony Driver said, you know, this is exactly the Chicago way that we're trying to avoid with this independent process. Your letter's inappropriate. Alderman fired back saying, we think that we can have a say. You know, we think we can, you know, speak our opinion about
does that,
this.
Does their move hold weight, the elders?
No.
When it comes to what the mayor will actually do?
I mean, perhaps. I mean, the mayor did speak out about you know, how McDermott is a well-respected police officer and thinks he could be qualified. But if he's not on the list of finalists, then yeah, they'll go back.
You know, I do think that it's this whole argument over how to handle it. Let's say that they had the members of city council had sent a letter to the commission versus making it public. Would that be seen as trying to get some sort of insider scoop or deal? You know, like what sort of interference is appropriate? As you go through that, this is a new system, a new mechanism. Is it interference if you go public, or is it greater interference by going through back channels that regular people might not be able to access? Yeah. Or perhaps even if they go through the program, a unified front of aldermen, is that exerting pressure? And so I think there's just a sort of a whole discussion as this is new.
Let's also stipulate this. If Mayor Johnson has someone in mind that he wants to be superintendent, he is very likely going to get that person. Because as Mariah said, mm-hmm, this rule is that this commission, which is an interim commission right now, by the way, and right, some older people have problems with that. But anyway, they have to send three finalists to him. He can say, I don't like any of them, go back to the drawing board. Or he can do what Rahm Emanuel did years and years ago with Eddie Johnson and say, we're going to pass an ordinance to circumvent the whole process because I want Eddie Johnson. You guys didn't come up with Eddie Johnson. That's who I want. Mm. There is nothing to stop Mayor Johnson and city council from passing an ordinance saying, this one time, again, we're going to circumvent the process and we're going to have McDermott or someone.
I don't think he would be in a very circumspect position,
sure,
if he were
he
to
says
go.
He's right, yeah. Right, right.
And I mean, the people who fought for this ordinance years ago under Mayor Lori Lightfoot are Johnson's closest allies, yeah, on the council. None of them signed on to this letter, you know, pushing for McDermott. So it would be a shock. But yes, that's the route that the council has. And that's kind of what was, you know, parsed out in the press this week, was aldermen saying, you know, we could change this ordinance if we want to. And I think that the main problem is that, you know, Brian Hopkins was saying, I think that this was what I was concerned about, was, you know, the city council not having a say in who leads the police department when aldermen hold water for crime in their communities.
Yeah, and I don't know if McDermott is the person, but you're the mayor of Chicago and Brandon Johnson is no different than any other mayor. You want a say in who your police. This is your most important hire. If there is someone that he said in his mind, that he knows that he wants to lead that department, he will get that person, yeah, somehow.
WBEZ's got a story out right now that's comparing candidate Johnson to Mayor Johnson, and particularly focusing on his stance regarding the presence of officers in schools. Mariah, what's the change there?
Yeah, so this story came out of some comments that Mayor Johnson made after a Wednesday city council meeting about a vote that's expected at the Board of Education next week to renew a contract with Chicago Police Department for $10 million to keep officers in, I would say, a little over a quarter of Chicago public, or a third of Chicago public schools. And this is a decision that is left up to local school councils, whether to decide to have officers in schools or not. And Johnson on the campaign trail had said he does not want to see police officers in schools. He said, you know, very clearly that officers do not belong in schools. And yesterday didn't make as strong, or Wednesday didn't make as strong of comments saying he believes in the democratic process and he thinks this is a decision that should be left up to local school councils. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that the CTU, when Johnson was an organizer for the union, railed against. They railed against the police department contract. And then when that decision was deferred to local school councils, they kind of, you know, made local school councils the target, though I think they kind of walked that back and then did decide to support that democratic process, which is what Johnson expressed on Wednesday.
Yeah, beyond police in schools, critics, including 45th Ward Alderman Jim Gardner and 19th Ward Alderman Matt O'Shea, they're becoming impatient with Johnson's approach to addressing the root causes of crime. What do you make of that, Paris?
Well, I make of it that he's been in office, what, about a month? we're not going to solve all of Chicago's problems in a month. And Johnson has said these are long-term solutions of disinvestment. These are generational problems. But, you know, Johnson is going to have to deal with the perception around crime and the message that he's going to put. And I've watched four mayors now struggle with this because, you know, gun crime is a persistent problem. It has been for the last 50 years. So I think it's going to be for the next several years.
But people want him to fix it now.
The question, yeah, the issue is, will people accept some sort of progress on it? And clearly, you know, things got worse under Lightfoot, although it got worse in so many different – it just kind of nationwide it got worse. Mayor Emanuel – they had gotten the homicide rate down under 500 a couple of those years in the 2010s, but people were still calling him the murder mayor and saying that this was a crisis. Well, in 2020, it was up past 800. So if it starts to go down toward that 500 number again, I think Mayor Johnson can claim progress. So we're not going to see significant progress in one term even. He's got to go out there.
Although a lot has changed in terms of the pandemic, as you noted, just right. National trends and what is going on
so
there.
So much is out of
and
the mayor's control.
It's also difficult to parse. I mean, I think the Sun-Times had a really interesting article, for example, about the number of, after the Anjanette Young raid and settlement, the number of warrants to search homes is significantly down. It is... far less, like decimals compared to
street stops had gone down, gun seizures had gone down, a lot of those things.
What does that contribute to crime? Is that a victory? Is it a failure? I think there's just so much there. But
Here's the thing. We talked about the city still needing to fill that police superintendent role, right? In the interim, Fred Waller says that CPD is, quote, working officers to a nub due to staffing shortages, Amanda. This is a department in transition, right? So what kind of challenges does that pose for reducing crime?
Significant challenges. And that's something that I think was an issue in the mayoral race as well. The mayor hasn't particularly committed to filling vacancies. His priority is increasing the number of detectives to solve some of these crimes, those that have gone unresolved, and that cause, of course, a lot of stress for the victims of people and family members of victims, as well as the community at large. So I don't know how you turn that around. We're seeing that in many sectors, of course, there being a staffing shortage. But it's a different ballgame when it comes to police.
Yeah.
And there are, again, many mayoral allies who would say the answer isn't police. It's okay to have those vacancies. We don't want all of them. It's a consistent challenge, and I don't think that Chicago has come to a resolution on it.
I think a positive development, I should start to jump in again, but we saw the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club, this is a group of business titans, put forth their plan, and it's nice to see some of the business leaders say, instead of saying we're going to leave and this is terrible, we're fleeing town, let's be part of the solution. Let's try to hire kids from all these impoverished neighborhoods. Let's try to put some money in investment. Let's put money behind things that are working in certain neighborhoods and take that citywide. That could really help. It's good to see some buy-in from the business community.
Yeah. Well, Mariah, progressive city council members, they want to reduce police presence in some ways. Let's listen here to Democratic Socialist Alderwoman Rosanna Rodriguez.
I think the problem that we have is that we are sending every single issue that we have to police. So you're always going to need more police when police is the only answer that you have for everything that happens. Homelessness, send police. Mental health issues, send police. Substance abuse, send police. Because you have other answers, right? And answers that can actually address the root causes of the issues that we're facing.
We know she's been instrumental behind Treatment Not Trauma and other legislation that's been not been focused on since Johnson's inauguration. Let's be real about that. So could sending fewer police to certain calls, could that actually help the department as it's dealing with these staffing issues right now?
Well, that's the, kind of philosophical argument behind Treatment Not Trauma, is that you take the burden off police officers by sending mental health professionals out instead of officers who respond to quite a good number of mental health crises. Lightfoot kind of got that program started, and she started the pilot program that sends mental health professionals out with police officers. And then even, I think that has progressed to a unit that sends solely mental health officers. But Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez and Mayor Brandon Johnson support putting their own stamp on that program and making it just mental health professionals, taking the burden completely off of police. And that is one of Johnson's key campaign promises that many people are going to be watching in the next year to see if he can kind of make progress on that. But it's not an easy ordinance to pass. The ordinance the overall plan of Treatment Not Trauma includes reopening the city's shuttered mental health clinics. And that is not an easy feat, especially because Lightfoot has kind of built up this infrastructure to use money to send out to, organizations that provide mental health resources to Chicagoans. And you can't kind of just take that money away from those organizations who have built webs of care in communities and just, reopen mental health clinics. And so it's a big, big challenge that, is billed as a solution to taking the burden off police, but it's not an easy one and not one that I think we're going to see, in his first 6 months in office.
Yeah. I want to turn now, unfortunately, to a tragic situation in Willowbrook. This was over the Juneteenth weekend. 23 shot and one dead at a holiday celebration. I mean, this was tough to read about. Anyone else see the story?
Well, I have so many questions. Yes, it's obviously it's a terrible tragedy, especially for the man that died. But was this a legal gathering, and why is there such a big gathering in a parking lot at a strip mall in the wee hours of the morning? And now I think that there are some questions about the liquor store owner, because some folks that were at that gathering say, well, this guy has allowed this for, and people have known about this, and the town has known about it, and
yeah.
is he within his legal rights to allow a gathering like that on that kind of property at midnight?
Yeah.
Things can go wrong.
The family of the deceased, Reginald Meadows was his name. They're suing the property owner.
Right. Right.
Of the strip mall.
Yeah. And I think there is an investigation in Willowbrook. So I mean, I'm going to be very curious to see the answers to that.
Yeah. Deputies from the area say that an unknown number of individuals fired on the crowd that was gathered for the event. Shooters have not been identified, which, I mean, that's got to be frustrating for survivors and families who were there attending. This is supposed to be a celebration.
Well, I mean, the shooters have not been identified. Like, you know, let's go back to the city of Chicago where, you know, something like half of actual homicides are ever actually solved. And then the shootings, like a fraction of the actual shootings are ever solved. Anyone's ever like brought in with charges. So this is something that Chicagoans know all too well. But yeah, I mean, what were the circumstances here? Were there just rival factions? Was it just a fight, an interpersonal situation? Was it? I think we're all waiting those answers.
So many questions still. And this caused friction, criticism from Republicans in Springfield, right? State Representative Mike Maron said the Democrats' plan to remove certain semi-automatic firearms has not made the state safer. And State Rep Dan Calkins said, it's not about guns, it's about people. So as we're going further into summer, I mean, I feel like the sad reality is that there are going to be more of these. This is going to keep happening. So our efforts coming from the state level to address this?
I mean, so as you noted, that quote-unquote assault weapons ban, and I say quote-unquote because those who are members of the gun community take umbrage with the term assault weapons. They don't believe that the guns that are included in the law are all that and that they are not weapons of war. But I believe there was a witness quoted that said that they heard 100 shots within a matter of seconds. So there are still these sort of guns that have that capability, as well as technology that turns guns into something that acts akin to a machine gun and can fire very rapidly. We don't know details about this particular incident and what went down exactly, but it's going to be difficult to get some of those off the street. Backers of that law say that is Illinois' sort of best effort. Yeah. I don't imagine there being further legislation anytime soon that will further crack down on guns.
And the current legislation has all kinds of legal challenges, so
exactly.
It's not even put into place in a lot of places.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly, but it's also the notion is you don't want more is
right.
What backers
right.
say.
Well, to those Republicans, if it's not the guns and it's just the people, then what is your solution? If it's not the guns. Then the solution is what?
And I never understand that argument because, you know, a lot of illegal guns come from states
right.
around Illinois that
right.
don't have the same sort of ban.
Right.
So I just don't think that is a, you know, logically sound argument when we see so many illegal guns coming in
yeah.
from states without similar bans.
Well, before we take a pause, Amanda, I want you to catch us up to speed here on another story from this week. Illinois scaling back health care benefits for undocumented immigrants as Governor Pritzker is exercising his authority to limit state-funded health care for low-income non-citizens, right? And you covered this.
Yeah, and so this is something that was really the big hiccup with getting a budget passed. And so this isn't a surprise. I mean, there is a lot of contention, and it is rare. I think this is really, frankly, the first time that Governor Pritzker has taken this sort of flack, especially from the progressive side. He has not seen a lot of that. He has sort of worked with progressives and catered his agenda toward and molded himself into, quote unquote, a practical progressive. So this is the first time that he's really getting this sort of pushback. And it will be, I'm going to be watching from a political perspective how much it sticks. Is this going to be something that is an exercise by a couple of groups, and yet you have Latino legislators who had been pushing for expansion of this program versus instead what you're getting, and that's the opposite, whether they are truly upset, or again, if this is sort of a wink and a nod protest because they were part of budget negotiations and this is a program that had skyrocketing costs and has since its very onset. But it does fly in the face of some of the governor's own phrases of including that healthcare should be a right and not a privilege. But that, as with so much else, comes up to practical concerns of budgetary limits.
Another story from the week that's been so hard to look away from, the Ocean Gate submersible. The Coast Guard announced that all five passengers of the Titan sub are dead after finding debris near the Titanic site yesterday. Authorities say the cause was a, quote, catastrophic implosion, end quote. What's been your reaction to all of this? Have you been following?
I think James Cameron, the director of Titanic, said it best when that this tragedy kind of mirrors the actual Titanic tragedy. I mean, they're going there to see the remains of Titanic. But this company apparently was not certified, you know, to dive that. Like this contraption, the submersible didn't get certified, you know, by whoever the organization is that certifies this stuff. And people are paying. But you know what? He can't help himself because it's. You know, I'm going to charge $250,000 and we're going to go see the remains of Titanic. It's just too great. Just like on the Titanic, we're going to build the biggest, fastest ship, but we're going to get there in record time. And, you know, no matter that there's an iceberg over here. But if you're paying $250,000, and it is a tragedy for them, and our hearts go out to their families, but do you not know that this company has not gotten, like, the certifications to do that kind of a dive? And you're really going to take that risk with your life?
Well, I think it's hard to argue that people on board did not know. We don't know what their level of knowledge was. A Google search will show up the CEO who was on board bragging about flouting safety concerns and saying that is part of the appeal, that, you know, it's a better mission with this risk. And then you hear from a former passenger who made the same trip saying, you know, I kissed my wife goodbye with COVID, by the way.
The Chicagoan, right?
I don't know if this was the Chicagoan.
The filmmaker?
I'm not sure his name, but, you know, I kissed my wife goodbye not knowing if I would ever see her again. Like, I knew that the risk I was taking was for
it's
the
part
thrill.
Of the exploration component of it. I mean, I think you have a lot of people
take
very
daring. Let's explain
what
Ocean Gate is.
So Ocean Gate is this company, and actually I did watch a story with the CEO talking about, you know, $250K is a lot of money, more than I have to take any certification. And if I was going to do one, it would not be to the depths of the ocean to see the Titanic. But for people that want to do that, he said, you know, they actually don't make that much money on it because it is part of this spirit of exploration. You use a lot of money in gas and the equipment and all these things, even if you look at some of the pictures and it's literally a, you know, game. I don't know if it's a Nintendo or what, but like a gamer controller that is controlling the direction of the submarine. I think that it is one of those things where you sign a waiver, you take on the risk. It does not make it any less of a tragedy for these individuals, but it is something to me where I'm as a journalist, I guess I'm constantly looking at the media and the amount of attention that this received when there's like massive issues going on in the world outside of it. I think it's one that because it is the Titanic and it is these incredibly wealthy individuals, it maybe just resonates, you can't help but, make comparisons to a story of a boat with hundreds of migrants.
Hundreds of migrants in the Mediterranean who are now dead.
Many of whom are dead, or even just the cost as they continue to look now for remains. My heart goes out to the individuals.
That's a significant.
But it's a significant cost.
That relates to a significant international policy issue and story. Right. And this is just an intrigue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know. So this Ocean Gate, this company. It's a private company out of Everett, Washington. So they're providing crewed submersibles for tourism, industry, research, exploration. And the five people on board were OceanGate CEO Stockton Rush, British businessman Hamish Harding, Pakistani businessman Shahzada Dawood, and teenage son Suleiman Dawood, and French explorer Paul-Henri Nargileau. It's been nonstop news about this all week. I mean, tragically, these people have lost their lives. But, I mean, what's interesting is there's this Chicago connection to the story. That's what I was bringing up, Mariah. His name is David Wadd. He's a filmmaker He's from North Suburban Lake Forest, and he made the journey to this wreckage back in 2021. And, you know, he says, you know, he would not have gone on that trip in 2021 if he would have, you know, he would have known. So people already had their concerns, it sounds like, before these five went down.
Yeah, and I think this company was warned of the potential for catastrophe on multiple occasions from news reports I've read. And so I do think they had a reputation of being kind of a risky business.
But you know what it reminds me of? I went skydiving once in Florida, and you know, before you have to sign your life away, basically. And
right.
Anything can happen, and you agree that our skydiving company is not liable if you die or if you get hurt or whatever. The chute doesn't open. You sign away any kind of you know, liability that this company would hold. And then they show you a video of all the things that can go wrong. And so it kind of weeds out like the you know, the pretenders here.
Yeah.
Like, so I was like, I came this far. I'm going to do it. But I'm comforted by the fact that I believe that that industry is regulated, that they got their, you know, certifications, and they show their certifications like, okay, well, it means something. You take your life into your hands when you get on an airplane, you know, but it's regulated by the FAA. And, you know, so and there's a safety track record.
I know.
Here.
Well, and you think of the psychology of it. The CEO is on the ship, and so I think part of my calculation would be:
well, he doesn't want to die.
He doesn't
want
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think there's so much to it.
But again, to our point earlier, how has this been covered? Right, compared to the other
ad
news out there?
Just how? Ad
nauseum.
The answer.
Yeah, I mean, 750 migrants on board. You know, another boat. This is
even
in
Chicago
Greek
tragedies.
Waters.
I mean, we just
Chicago tragedies.
Drownings.
There's plenty of individuals.
Well, because it's so unusual. But I'll defend the media coverage of it and say this: you know, we're so polarized, and no one can agree on anything politically. And politics dominates, you know, national news and cable news. And when there's a story that everyone can kind of come together, whatever your political stripe is, and kind of discuss and talk about.
Or joke about.
Yeah, and I don't
many,
think we should joke
jokes.
About.
Way
yeah.
too
no,
many
no, no.
jokes.
Many jokes.
But it's from a media set, I'll defend the coverage because it's good to have stories that everybody can kind of talk about and agree on no matter what your political stripe is, because we're so in our silos and everything else.
But there's a point where you stop.
Sure.
And you look around
at the
other
things. But then there's a point
where
you bring up, like you said, the migrants – off the coast of Greece, and
it has perhaps brought more attention
to
that issue.
Yeah.
It's maybe brought more attention to regulatory issues, and also maybe the cost of exploration. You look at space exploration and some of the calculations that, and risks that go along with that, and yet the necessity, perhaps, of doing it.
Yeah. This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Let's reset for a moment, shall we? We are talking about some of the latest happenings here in Chicagoland and across the country in our weekly news recap. Our panelists, Paris Schutz and Amanda Vinicky of WTTW and Mariah Wolfel of WBEZ. All right. FX's The Bear is back with a second season. Did you all watch the first season?
I didn't finish it.
Are you excited?
Yeah, the first few episodes.
I didn't finish it either.
It's too intense. It gives me anxiety. It's so intense. Everything. It's like working at that beef shop seems like it's more stressful than working in the military or something.
Yes, totally agree.
Lisa Lobb is here from WBEZ. Says no spoilers. Well, Lisa, I don't think we have any for you. It looks like none of us have watched.
It does make me want a beef. I'll say that. I really liked that Sydney character. I think Carmi's a good actor.
What do you think of its depiction of Chicago? The series.
I was really anti The Bear for a long time and didn't watch it because I was like, this is just going to anger me because, you know, they're going to get street names wrong. They're going to make bad references. And they did.
And have bad accents, too.
Yeah. But I severed my thinking and I was just like, whatever. I'm going to think about this as a show that's not in Chicago. I'm not going to watch it for the Chicago-ness of it because that's just all wrong. And then you just watch it for, like, the drama and the character development. Yeah. And then it was good and I appreciated it.
All right, kind of on that same note of food, Amanda, I'm looking at you. Earlier this week, you put out a tweet, didn't you?
A whole story, yeah.
Some,
I did a
some
story.
Some fish made of fungi?
Yeah, I did a whole story. Check it out. It was really fascinating on a Chicago-based company that is trying to, save the world in its own way, particularly when you look at increasing populations in Asia in particular, where they consume a lot of fish, and there are overfishing concerns and what that does to our oceans. And so trying to resolve that by coming up with a product that is sort of like alternative meats, although they don't love that comparison because they say they don't have a lot of additives in theirs. They don't want to be like, oh, it's just soy. So it uses the root. It doesn't taste like mushroom. I tried some and it was, I'm pregnant, so I haven't been able to have sushi. And let me tell you, it was amazing to have something. I cannot wait to have this baby so that I can have some sushi. This is not on the market yet. Right. Otherwise, I'd be getting the more of this. But the objective is to have it be a lower cost alternative to fish that has the same nutritional component. And so it could be a huge win for a Chicago company if they are successful in this endeavor. And while it, again, benefited me in my current state of health, the real objective is to try and really make a dent in this terrible pollution problem and overfishing issues.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, before we go, I want to get some recommendations from you because WBEZ just released its 2023 summer guide yesterday. We know there's a lot of things happening this weekend and beyond. What are you looking forward to? Let's start with this weekend, Paris. You first.
Well, there's the Reset Festival. It has nothing to do with BEZ.
I'm not there.
In Reese Park. it's a music festival. I'm looking forward to Maestro Ricardo Muti's final performance as conductor. That's going to be on Saturday. Then Tuesday at Millennium Park, he's going to give the big free final concert for Chicago before he steps down as music director at CSO.
Where are you two going to be?
What do I have going this weekend? Let's see. I'm going to Stevie Nicks
tonight.
Oh, wow. And then also the White Sox game tomorrow. They've got a real cool giveaway. It's the basketball jersey. They do a hockey jersey, a football jersey, and tomorrow's the basketball jersey.
I'm
all for Sox gear.
Mariah, real quick.
Very nice. What am I doing? There's the Pride Parade on Sunday.
You're going. WBEZ will be there. That's right. That's your answer. Our thanks to WBEZ City Politics reporter Mariah Wolfel, WTTW correspondent and anchor Paris Schutz, and WTTW Politics correspondent. Can't speak today. Amanda Vinicky. Have a great weekend. This episode of Reset was produced by Stephanie Kim, Meha Ahmed, Michael Liptrot, and Micah Yasin. And it was edited by Dan Tucker, Ethan Schwab, and Meha Ahmed. Get the recap and all the great coverage we do here on Reset by subscribing to our podcast. And when you do, be sure to leave us a rating and review. That'll do it for Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Have a great weekend.